The award-winning British historian and author Bettany Hughes joins us now, I'm delighted to say. She spent the last 30 years delving into the ancient past, researching everything from Helen of Troy to Socrates. But her new book, Istanbul, A Tale of Three Cities, plunges us into the backstory of the Turkish city with three names. It was originally called Byzantium, was rechristened Constantinople after its conquest by Roman Emperor Constantine the Great, adopting its current name, meaning in the city, only in 1923. Istanbul has survived wars, revolutions, and bloody sieges by everyone from the Goths to the Christian Crusaders. It served as the capital of the Roman, Byzantine, and Ottoman empires. But in each of its incarnations, one thing held true. It held sway over international trade, global politics, and poets' imaginations. Bettany Hughes' Istanbul, A Tale of Three Cities is not so much a book as a biography, or should I say three epic biographies. Bettany, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Good morning to you. How nice to speak to you.
Look, could I just say at the start what a completely enthralling and all-encompassing read your book is? I mean, you've obviously explored every nook and cranny of Istanbul, even, I believe, crawling through tunnels several hundred feet underground at one point. Could I ask you what inspired such a passion for the place?
Oh, well, I think it's two things, really. I think it's the fact that I believe one of the most critical cities in the world, that we talk about it as being this city that's the bridge between East and West, but that is only a tiny fraction of why we should care about the place, because it's not just a bridge, it's a crucible of civilization, and it's also, if you look at a map, it's the city that connects North and South. So I thought it deserved a biography that went right back through its history. And then, as you said, even back to the prehistory of the city, because actually the story of the city starts 8,000 BC. So it's such a rich place, and I wanted to try to get under its skin. So you're right, I did spend a lot of time there, a lot of time underground there, because I kind of think as a historian, you should never be an armchair historian. You should always go to the place where history happens.
Now, who told you that?
Well, my tutor at university, who's a brilliant man called Robin Lane Fox, who's written a lot about the Greek world, and I remember him saying, don't just kind of sit in the library, go there. And so I travelled to Iran, Iraq, and Turkey, and just fell in love with Istanbul on that trip. So I was 18, looking at all the classical sites. And it just felt to me that there was a multi-layered history of the city that was waiting to be told.
And now there's so much in your book, so this is really what we're doing is a snapshot to sort of tease people to think about it. But you do say that it is the longest-lived political entity in Europe, which I didn't know, and it's actually, at the latest count, archaeologists have measured 42 human habitation layers. Just to give us a little bit more about that, please.
Well, it's if you look at it, it's such a strategic place. So it's got control, really, of, if you look south, then you see Africa. If you just hop on a little ferry across the Bosphorus, you know, spend the equivalent of one English pound, then you're travelling from Europe to Asia. So it makes sense that it's been a strategic place and somewhere people have wanted to live, not just for centuries, but for millennia. But the very, very exciting thing for me is because it's a modern city that's really trying to make its mark in the world, there's a huge amount of development there, including two massive tunnels which have been built under the Bosphorus connecting Europe and Asia. And I knew when this was happening, I knew that that would turn up a lot of archaeology. And indeed it has. So we now know of the very first inhabitants who were living there. So again, we're talking about 8,000, even up to 10,000 years ago. In fact, there's evidence of pre-humans 400,000 years ago.
Really?
In the Istanbul area, sharing a cave with these kind of giant prehistoric bears. Very interestingly. But we've got the very first little community. So in these amazing digs that went along with the constructions of the tunnels, what has been discovered, for instance, is the world's oldest canoe paddle, the world's oldest wooden coffin. And these were men and women who were living in this little, gorgeous little place, really surrounded by oak forests and pistachio forests. So the story of the city, as I said, absolutely starts in prehistory, and it flourishes from that point onwards.
You remark on the utter magic and bewitching capacity of the Hagia Sophia, which exactly happened to me, I've got to say. And you've got this great line. You walked into the doors. This is when you were young, as an 18-year-old, I take it. And you thought, this right here is the story of the world. This is something I have to understand. In this breathtaking, you think it's the most beautiful building on earth, and I don't think you're wrong. Now, if you can remember what it was that bewitched you about the Hagia Sophia.
I think it's just got this extraordinary magnetic presence. So for close on 1,000 years, it was the building with the biggest dome span in the entire world. So you've almost got the sort of passion and awe that people felt when they thought about the Hagia Sophia. It seems to kind of still be in the air of the place. So it's a place that's commanded respect and interest down the centuries. It's the most beautiful building. The fact that it's survived for centuries, both as the biggest church in the world and then as a mosque, and now, of course, it's a museum. So it's had it many lifetimes. But I think also that, for me, in its present form, it was largely rebuilt by this incredible power couple who ruled the city when it was called Constantinople. And this is Justinian and Theodora, so the Emperor Justinian and his amazing wife Theodora. And they're an incredible pair. So we're talking about the 6th century AD. And they had this rags-to-riches story, both of them, both from incredibly modest origins. Theodora particularly, you know, Theodora starts out life as a prostitute and basically sleeps her way to the top and ends up being the empress of an empire that covers 1 million square miles. I mean, so she is the most powerful woman in the world at that time. And the two of them conceived this plan after the city's gone through a series of riots and disasters, and they rebuild this incredible church. And I think just that dedication and devotion and hope and sense of kind of glory in the future, I think that's really built into the bricks and mortar of the place. So it's one of the reasons I love it. And I, as I said, it just seems to me that it's almost like a kind of box in which the collective experience of men and women over centuries is still stored.
Professor Bettany Hughes is my very welcome guest, and she's written a big term of a book that she spent decades on, A Tale of Three Cities, Istanbul. And it's terrific to, I suppose, try to trace this history. For instance, you make the point that it has a very unique topography. It was described in The Dream of Osman as being a diamond mounted between two sapphires and two emeralds. How did the early settlement's location help shape its history?
I think the fact that it's surrounded by waterways has always been an incredible strength for the city. So as a species, we're driven to trade and to connect and to communicate with one another. And Istanbul really facilitates that because, of course, it's much faster to travel over water than it is over land. So the connecting Bosphorus, which you go south and you have the Aegean and the Mediterranean and the Sea of Marmara and then Africa beyond, and you go north and you have the Black Sea and then what is now Russia and the great continents of the north. So it allows communication and trade. And even within the city itself, you've got the Golden Horn, this beautiful little estuary strip, which is called the Golden Horn because it used to be so thick with fish that people described the water shining as though it was full of diamonds because of the sun reflecting off the fish scales. So the water that surrounds it, a medieval writer said it was garlanded by waters, and I think that's absolutely right. But not only that, why it's so excitingly connected is the Romans recognized its commercial potential and they built a huge superhighway called the Ignatian Way, which basically ran from the toe of Italy. So you had to get a boat from the toe of Italy and then it starts in what's modern day Albania. And this incredible road that just powers over Central Europe from Italy straight into the heart of Istanbul. And they actually set up a milestone in the center of Istanbul, which was the mother of all milestones, and it was physically ground zero for the Roman world. So it was from that milestone that all measurements in the Roman world were taken. So Istanbul, as it was then called, Byzantium, this was the heart of the world. And you can still see that milestone if you go there today. It's pretty denuded. It's kind of rather distressed bit of rock kind of clinging on in the centre of the town. But that was considered the centre of the earth.
Yes, and of course it did start off as really a Greek settlement and then it became Roman. And then, because I'm moving through fast, the great 1453 massive turning point when the Muslims basically sacked the city or took it over. Now, tell us how you've incorporated, I think a lot of us know that date as a massive turning point in history. Do you think it's a fair thing to see it like that?
Well, I do. I'm slightly controversially in the book. I kind of think it's one of those things, as you said, it's like one of the big dates in history. So the Ottomans take the city. But actually, if you look at what was going on, really, the city had started to fall a lot earlier than that. So in 1204, in the Fourth Crusade, there's this terrible event where Latin Catholic invaders from the West, so the Franks or the Latins, as they were called, they surround the city and they persuade themselves that those inside are the wrong kind of Christians because they're Orthodox Christian. And it's basically an excuse to get their hands on the riches of the city because this was one of the richest cities on earth. At that point, it was one of the biggest cities on earth. And so they besiege the city in 1204 and the suffering inside is absolutely terrible and take it over and control it for half a century. And it's almost from that point, I think, actually, that you find kind of the mojo of Istanbul beginning to evaporate. And those within the city then start to collaborate with the Ottomans. So they marry, you know, the kind of sons of princes and the daughters of Byzantine emperors, marry the daughters of the Ottoman rulers and the sons of the Ottoman rulers. So there's a lot of collaboration between them. So it's not quite such a kind of massive epic cleft in history as we want. We like our history very neat, you know. We like to think that there are these kind of game-changing moments. That said, though, of course, it does change the city because from 1453 onwards, this is now an Ottoman city. It's now a Muslim city. It's now sacred to Allah, and it is an Ottoman city right up until the 1920s, 1923, 1924, and it was the centre of the Ottoman Caliphate for all those years. And again, the Ottomans then take on the mantle of the Byzantine Empire, and from that amazing city of Istanbul, really they control most of the known world.
You basically don't go much beyond the 1923 period, do you?
I don't, because that's the point when the capital of then moves to Ankara. Yeah, and it becomes the Turkish Republic. And even though actually Istanbul life doesn't stop, you know, and it's still a significant city, it feels like that was a moment where things really change and it becomes what's important are the kind of memories of the city rather than it as a kind of functioning administrative capital. So, yeah, so I thought I had to stop somewhere. And there's, you know, my goodness, the history, the politics of Turkey means its history is changing so fast, it felt that there would almost never be an appropriate end if I was to carry on right up to the modern day. Even as I was writing the book, you know, I had to keep on rewriting the introduction and the conclusion because events were moving so fast there. So it felt like an appropriate place to kind of to begin to make my finish.
Are you therefore somewhat calm or tranquil or fatalistic about the future, given the fact that you've absorbed yourself in the sheer ebb and flow of this city? You know, given that clearly we're entering a very new phase, dumping Ataturk's legacy.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think the one thing from having spent so much time in the company of the city and the ordinary men and women who've lived there over centuries, what you get the sense is that it is a very resilient city. So civilizations come and go, rulers come and go, religions come and go, but Istanbul stays, and it stays as this kind of pulsing, dynamic, beating heart of both Eastern and Western culture. So, you know, I know that it has suffered tough times and it's going through tough times now, both, you know, because of what's happening there internally, but also suffering from the terror attacks. And I've been caught up in some of those terror attacks in Istanbul. But I have absolutely no doubt that the city has the resilience to not just survive, but to thrive.
Well, I do desperately hope you're right. Look, congratulations. I wish I'd written a book like this. It's just simply...
Thank you. Well, I loved the writing of it. It was a great pleasure to do it because it's just such a gorgeous place.
Bethany Hughes, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
And Bettany's book is Istanbul, A Tale of Three Cities. It's published by Weidenfeld and Nicholson, distributed by Hachette Australia. It's very big. It certainly will threaten the forests, but it's quite something.